With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Issues that impact you are the same issues that impact Damian Richardson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
He's been talking about Kelly J. Keene's visit down under to the Antipodes, if you like, to both Australia and New Zealand, and for the Let Women Speak event. And I was going to do, I'd like to read something. I'm going to read something from Quadrant Magazine, and it just came to my attention today. And it's a magazine I like to support. It's an anti-globalist, pro-nationalist magazine, more traditionally would have been called a conservative magazine. It did used to receive a little bit of funding from the Australia Council, but guess who decided that it shouldn't get funding anymore? No, not a Labor Prime Minister, but a Liberal one, the best Labor Prime Minister the Liberals ever had, I like to call him, Malcolm Turnbull, thought it should no longer receive any funding, the small paltry bit that it got. So if it's something you're looking to pick up, a periodical, a magazine that reflects your, you know, anti-globalist, pro-nationalist ideas, you could do much worse than to grab yourself a copy of Quadrant. I will say, too, full disclosure, they've published a couple of articles of mine back in the day, some years ago now, but indeed they have. And as they've also published articles by, you know, luminaries like Tony Abbott, maybe that's why Malcolm thought he's not going to give this periodical money anymore, because he was frightened what Tony might write about him. I remember when I got an article published in it, I actually told an acting friend of mine, oh, look, I got an article published in Quadrant. And they're like, yeah, that's great, man. Where are you going? not one not to poke the bear or ride the tiger, as they say. So this article is by Timothy Coates. Better get on with it, because it's going to run out of time. Ever since the events outside Victoria's Parliament last Saturday, I have seldom seen so many members of our political and media class quite so eager to parade their stupidity. I refer, as you may have guessed, to their apparent inability to count beyond two. To recap, British activist Kelly J. Keene Minchell brought her Let Women Speak tour to Melbourne last weekend, where a diverse group of campaigners took to the microphone to vent their frustration at the most recent assaults on women's rights. As the many social media clips of the rally attest, the unwanted intrusion of biological men into women's change rooms, sporting codes, and prison cells were just some of the points of discussion. A second group of protesters, as expected, marched onto the scene and set themselves against their female opponents. These transgender activists and allies, many of whom were easily identifiable by their low growls and unladylike appearance, made their demands with perfect clarity. For example, they are very much for the rights of bearded blokes in ill-fitting dresses to share public bathrooms with young girls. In politer moments, they called their adversaries bigots and TERFs, but would have much preferred that the Let Women Speak speechmakers shut up entirely. This is where it got tricky for some of our innumerate journalists and PMs, as later in the day, a third group of black-clad, Sikh-hiling neo-Nazis started their own rally. True to character, they annexed a good deal of space around the parliament steps and beclowned themselves in front of all the attendees and media. Understandably, Keane Minchell and her co-speakers, which included Liberal Upper House MP Moira Deeming, were horrified by the arrival of these hijackers and felt physically intimidated by their presence, as they relayed in a video recorded after the event. So he's going to distance himself from them. Everyone's getting away from the Nazis. Oh, dear. Let's be clear. One would have to be laughably obtuse to see an equivalence between groups one and three. Absolutely. One would have to believe that a women's rights group, which was explicitly founded to keep men out of women's spaces, also welcomes neo-Nazis into those same spaces. Moreover, one would have to believe that the wonderfully fiery Let Women Speak organiser, Angie Jones, a left-wing Jewish feminist, is also chummy with Melbourne's band of pathetic black shirts. Finally, one would have to discard the obvious explanation, which is that a minuscule sect of Hitler fanboys like making a pest of themselves at public events, as they did during the CFMEU protests at the height of the COVID lockdowns in 2021. I don't remember that. I was there. I don't remember it. Unfortunately, such stupidity must be part of the selection selection criteria for many of our current politicians and media figures who have recited their party lines all week with very little backlash. Greens leader Adam Bandt and Samantha Ratnam made competitively fatuous statements, but both had a clear enough meaning. The rally goers standing up for women's rights were true allies of neo-Nazis, and there was no real organisational or moral difference between the two. Daniel Andrews, contemptible as ever, implied that the protest had a Nazi-like quality before the gatecrashers even arrived. By the following Tuesday, when the Let Women Speak tour had arrived in Tasmania, the whole organisation had transmogrified into literal Nazis, according to local Hobart Oaf and Greens representative Ben Loeberger, as he cheered on Keane Mitchell's latest counter-protesters, Councillor Loeberger, while picturing himself as some kind of noble resistance fighter, no doubt, bravely tweeted, "This is how you treat Nazis." The journalists, unsurprisingly, have been even worse. The ABC, to its usual discredit, has insisted on throwing around the euphemism anti-trans in lieu of the more accurate pro-women's rights at every opportunity, and just about every other media outlet has followed its lead. ABC editors, though, are rather well-adjusted compared to Amy Remenikis, one of the more embarrassing tantrum throwers employed at The Guardian. On Twitter, Remenikis advanced a conspiracy theory alleging that the Nazis had provided some kind of ideological backbone to the gender-critical movement long before anyone even RSVP'd to Saturday's rally. To be fair to Remenikis, she isn't alone in her lunacy, as such wild imaginings have been part of the transgender rights movement in Australia for some considerable time. I'm going to run out of time. I've only got a couple of paragraphs to go, but I will run out of time. So if you want to read it, I suggest you buy Quadrant, but you can see even there that he's appropriating a lot of the language of the left because we're saturating in it. So otherwise people don't know how to speak. If you missed your favourite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit on the TNT radio website. We are also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there is no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
Unbiased and reliable news coverage.
It's the news I trust.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The public display of hate symbols like Nazi flags will be banned in Queensland under proposed laws set to be introduced by the state government today. TNT radio news producer Jeremy Beck has details on this story.
Thanks, Damien. Jeremy?
Sorry.
Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk says there is no room for hateful ideologies. Our government promised to review and strengthen serious vilification and hate crimes laws, that this bill is delivering on that promise. She says these reforms mean Queensland will have some of the strongest hate laws in the country. Wow. Now, Damien, under the new offence of prohibited symbols, public display, public distribution, or publication of prohibited symbols in circumstances that might reasonably be expected to cause a member of the public to feel menaced, harassed, or offended are prohibited unless the person has a reasonable excuse. Now, this includes publishing images or symbols online, or on social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook, or publicly displaying hateful tattoos. Now, criminals found guilty of violent crimes, including assault and grievous bodily harm, are motivated by hateful ideologies. They will face an increased penalty for that as well, including longer jail terms. It won't be illegal to possess material displaying nominated hate symbols, but it will be illegal to display them. The new law will give police officers and the courts expanded powers to prove a hate crime. Officers will be permitted to access the phone records of suspected offenders, provided they have a warrant. So strong laws for Queensland, Damien.
Jeremy, where do I start? Tell me, what impact do you think this legislation will really have?
I think it is quite severe. Potentially, it won't stop anyone who has some crazy ideas it might actually encourage them. It might actually make them feel more ostracized and grow the neo-Nazis or grow the radical fringes of society. So potentially could have negative consequence. Now, it's interesting though that Attorney General Shannon Fentiman says there will be exemptions to the proposed laws with hate symbols permitted for educational, historical, and religious purposes, as well as cultural settings. As she says, we know, for example, the swastika, as opposed to the Nazi hooked cross, is a religious symbol for people practicing Hinduism and Buddhism. So I don't think the laws will affect those people in the community who do have this symbol. And I've seen it plenty of times, particularly overseas when I've done some traveling in India. You see these swastikas all over the place, and I thought, what's going on here? So you won't be breaking the law there, but I think it has some worrying trends which could get much worse.
It's ironic this is Attorney General Fentiman bringing in this legislation. She's the one that brought in the legislation that allowed men to self-identify in the first place. It's a perfect circle for her. It's come all the way. She's caused the problem, perhaps, in many respects, although the problem obviously predates her, and now she's coming up with a solution as well. Do you foresee further laws being implemented in the future, Jeremy?
I suspect so, Damien. I think it's a concern because, as I said before, I don't think this will help in terms of reducing those angry people in society who misplace and believe that Hitler's a great man or some other crazy idea. I don't think it's going to stop them. I think it might embolden them. They'll think that they're victimised and increase the division. So I think if more laws are passed, which seems quite likely the way we're going, unfortunately, it will only make the society more divided. And I think that suits certain goals, the globalists who want that in the first place.
So are you allowed to go to a fancy dress dressed up as your favourite Nazi character anymore, like Dominic Perrottet did, Prince Harry did, many people have done? Is that still okay?
It seems to me that they would be breaking the law according to this law. So they better not do it or they may face some time.
So now's the time to get hold of any Nazi paraphernalia because price is going to go absolutely through the roof. They're going to create absolute scarcity around this stuff. It's going to be as rare as hen's teeth. It's going to be worth a fortune because it's banned. And it's just going to be like a red flag to young men, isn't it? Here you can transition at the age of 14. That's absolutely fine. Here, take drugs. We'll decriminalize the drugs and stuff as well. My God, don't you dare do a Roman salute. Go to jail.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it's...
It's only going to make the problems worse, I see. I don't think that this is designed in all seriousness to make a better society. I think it has some sinister undertones.
I think everyone's running scared of white identity politics. I really think I'm onto something there. But anyway, let's not go any further down that rabbit hole. Jeremy Beck, news producer, thanks so much for that story. You're listening to TNT Radio.
The greatest risk we run in a free society is that some may abuse that freedom. The solution to that abuse isn't taking away the freedom. The solution to that abuse is punishing the offenders and taking reasonable steps while preserving God-given rights to prevent the abuse in the future. To you leftists who want to use tragedy to install complete government control. Our rights are not negotiable. We'll talk about it on the next Chris Salcedo Show on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody,
and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity.
If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind
and some who haven't yet been cataloged.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, this guest is a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, I should say, and he is the first timer on the show. His name is Greg Cheeseman. He began his career in television production on his 19th birthday with a very junior position at the ABC. He won't be doing that again. After 6 years, he moved to Channel 7 for a short stint and from there moved on to become one of Melbourne's busiest freelance sound designers and engineers. After 20 years of audio production in television, film and radio, he decided to branch out to become a successful real estate agent and auctioneer in Bayside, Melbourne, as well as running his audio production business. It was all going well until COVID hit and both his income streams were made illegal. Forced into unemployment for the first time in his life, Greg stepped up his lifelong interest in politics and began heavily campaigning against the state government and created the hashtag Sack Dan Andrews, a family man, former business owner, a black belt in taekwondo, public speaker, professional Santa and political campaigner. Greg stands by his beliefs of honesty, integrity and personal responsibility, as well as standing up for those who cannot stand up for themselves. Greg Cheeseman, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Damien. It's a pleasure to be here, and what a wonderful introduction. It's you'd be forgiven to think I wrote it for myself, but
yeah, it's extraordinary. You've cut into half your time. I was going to interview, but now you know I've taken up most of the time reading out your bio. I just want to on your bio, you surely don't stack up a Santa, a thin, erudite man like yourself. Can you do Santa?
You're too kind, my friend. There's a couple of things that have been said about my Santa performance. One is that I'm too tall to be Santa. The other is that I'm too young to be Santa, but I've never been accused of being too thin to be Santa.
Too skinny.
I look forward to that one day.
And you think you've got it? Do you think you've got a chance of getting back on the ABC or even Channel 7 for that matter, considering some of the stances you've taken throughout the pandemic?
I think my chances of winning lotto numerous times are probably far higher, but they've got my number if they want to give me a call, but I won't hold my breath for it.
I didn't realize you had so much experience in radio. I wouldn't have gotten you on. You might be a threat to my position here with a nice deep voice you've got there too.
I've got to say, Damien, I've had a good listen to your show and I'm absolutely no threat to you. You're safe in your position there at 10. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, mate. That's why I got you on. Okay, now, so what's going on? Dan Andrews has gone back to China, Beijing in particular. How many times has he gone? I can't even keep count. How many times has he gone as our premier to China?
The number that he's gone, it depends who you talk to. And then the official figure, 8 or 9, it seems to be a little unclear, but there are others who are a little closer to him than the official circles that are saying it's more in the teens since he's been premier. Regardless of the actual figure, he's been there a lot and it's a disproportionate number of trips to China. And this one in particular is one that we really should all be concerned about.
Why this one in particular?
Well, normally with a premier planning a trip overseas, it's announced well ahead of time. This one was announced with a day's notice. So it raises a question. Why is he going? What's on short notice? Is he going or has he been summoned? And that's the first question among many that needs to be answered.
And he's only going for 4 days too. It's very short, isn't it?
Yes, it's very short. Normally political trips are short because they're business only, not pleasure. There's not a lot of sightseeing that gets done. And you would think with the number of times that he's been there, whether it's 8 or 14 or somewhere in between, he's probably seen the sights of Beijing at least. So there's probably not a lot of sightseeing that he'll be doing. There'll be some business done, no doubt. And that's where the concerns begin. If I can just roll on with this for a moment, Damien.
Yep.
The concern starts certainly with the lead time. There was about 24 hours notice or 1 day's notice before he left, which is very unusual. What else is unusual is not the topic that he announced that he was going to discuss education and trade, but when you are going to discuss education and trade with another country, you would normally take your education minister and your trade minister. This trip is entirely absent of both those ministers. So maybe that's a reflection of his view of their competencies. I'm not sure, but certainly they're not involved in any discussions. Although I note Mr. Andrews will be meeting with the Minister for Education, Chinese Minister for Education, who's labelled on his itinerary, his one-day itinerary that has been released, His Excellency Mr. Wai Jingping. I hope I've got that pronunciation correct.
Yeah, I wasn't going to touch it. I was going to leave it. I thought you did well just to call him Minister for Education, but keep going, please.
Yeah. I'll have a crack at that, and forgive me if I'm wrong. Some of your listeners might want to correct me on that pronunciation, but he's the Minister for Education. So I think it's fairly or very unusual that a Premier would go and meet a Minister for Education without his own Education Minister travelling with him. No mention of what's happening with the Minister for Trade, although I'm sure there will be some trade discussions, but he certainly hasn't taken the Minister for Trade, Tim Pallas, with him either. And questions are being asked as to why. And then whilst we're asking questions as to why, normally a Premier would take with them some Australian journalists or Victorian journalists to cover the trip, ask some questions along the way, and if they're doing their job, and we all hope they do, ask some really good questions about what's going on as they seek to verify the facts as they are presented by the Premier and the country who he is visiting. Interestingly, Mr. Andrews has elected not to take any journalists with him, and the only reason given is to say there's no real photo opportunities. This is just back-to-back meetings, which, again, is highly unusual. So, again, more and more questions are being asked. And as is typical with this government and this Premier in particular, there are lots and lots of questions, but there are very few answers.
How are the Fourth Estate taking that, the fact that they haven't been invited?
The questions are rampant. There's a lot of criticism out there. The Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance themselves have stated that this is unusual, and it's being mentioned as being an attack on free speech and hiding from scrutiny. So why would the Premier go at short notice to another country to have high-level meetings and not want any scrutiny as to what's going on? When you look at the sum of all parts, it looks odd. It is very peculiar. It's one of those situations where it needs more answers and further investigation. Journalists across the state of all persuasions politically are left scratching their head.
It's been extraordinary to be in Victoria over the last 3 or 4 years, hasn't it? Because obviously COVID, the lockdowns, the restrictions destroyed your business and destroyed many, many, many people's lives. But the big build as well, I've never seen anything like it. I remember when Jeff Kennett built CityLink and that seemed extraordinary, but it seems so insignificant now compared to the big build that the Andrews government has undergone, clearly with money through the Belt and Roads Initiative.
Well, the big concern about the big build is the lack of business case. There's a lot of money being spent, a lot of borrowed money that will take many, many, many generations to repay, if at all. You're correct. I believe this is part of the Belt and Road Initiative, even though the official memorandums of understanding and whatever other the three secret deals were that we're still not allowed to know, that were scuttled by the previous federal government, even though they've been scuttled, this still continues. So we know the details of those as far as they can only be altered or ended through diplomatic channels, which is highly unusual for a state to be assuming that role, because that would be at a federal level. So here we have a state premier elevating himself to the level of a nation or the same level as the federal government, believing that he can negotiate and take part in deals that should really be happening on a federal level. So there's no business case for what's been going on. There's a lot of money. Now, with Victoria's debt looking like it's going to hit $165 $1 billion by 2026. And that will mean that the interest bill alone will be $10 million a day. That's based on current estimates. That means that we are throwing all our eggs into one basket with no business case and no hope to repay. Again, more questions as to why. Why do we need this? What's happening? And who's really behind it?
So what worries, is that cause for concern for Andrews, or do you think he's got something up his sleeve that will resolve that problem for himself as far as this relationship's actually concerned?
Well, I think, as he says, it's about jobs. That's what he'll come back and he'll say that I was there and it's all about protecting and improving jobs. I don't think it's yours and mine, my friend. I think it's more his and his colleagues. It's about their jobs, because it's never about the people of Victoria. There's a whole lot of masquerading that goes on. And this is really sad and worrying, because these are people who are elected to represent us. They are there to administer the money they collect from us. So essentially it's our money as taxpayers of Victoria and Australia. And we can talk for hours on where that money actually comes from and how it gets to the states. But when you've got these administrators of our money not telling us where and how this money is going to be spent and what we're being committed to, you really have to come back and ask why. And we're going round and round in circles asking why this, why that, and there's never any answers.
We're going to come back after this break and we're going to ask you why. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Check this out.
Now, TNT Radio News. Can you say
news?
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. There have been stunning scenes in Paris, reminiscent of urban warfare, as the population continues to push back against the government and its controversial pension reforms. Former US President Donald Trump's warned Washington is paving the path to nuclear war as it continues to fan the flames in Ukraine. And famous Twitter commentators are up in arms after it was confirmed they'll lose the blue tick that helped verify their identity on the site if they don't start paying for it.
Do you have a suggestion for a possible guest you'd like to hear on TNT Radio?
Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss?
Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Greg, the fact of the matter is, isn't it? Nobody cares why. They see the big build. So many people are making money out of it. More people that are content with Andrews' government, or even actually encouraging of the Andrews government, than are discontent with it. So it'll just continue on, won't it? Just kicking the can down the road, maybe with no vision for the future. But what can you do? He got returned with an increased majority in November.
Okay, couple of points in there. You said nobody cares. I'm not so sure about that. Certainly I know I do and my colleagues do.
I'd say people care, but less than don't. Do you know what I mean? More people are happy for it to continue on the gravy train, or see the big build that's going on around them and think it's a wonderful thing.
There is the element of people enjoying the free stuff right now. For the benefit of your listeners outside of Victoria right now, there's a scheme where you can get money from the government. Well, when I say that, I mean the taxpayer, straight out of the taxpayer's pocket, just by clicking a link on a website. Sounds like a great deal on the surface of it, until you think about where that money's coming from. It's all borrowed money, because we as a state are in so much debt. We are now going to be slashing the public service and cutting funding to community groups. The two big beneficiaries of election promises, they thought, are now getting betrayed by the ones that they supported in the election. So they've run out of money while people are thinking this is great, we're getting free stuff, and all it is doing is kicking the debt can down the road. So that's one thing. There are groups that are going to benefit whilst there is this government in office. They have worked for the next generation or two. So yes, they will benefit. But ultimately, the ones that don't benefit is the everyday Victorians. Because with this debt ballooning, with our interest bill alone being $10 million a day, every dollar that goes into repaying this debt or even servicing the interest bill, every dollar that is spent on that is one less dollar that gets spent where it's needed. One less dollar on schools and teachers, hospitals, nurses, doctors, ambulances, emergency services of all descriptions, law enforcement, community groups that need funding for the good work that they do, our mental health sector, that all goes without whilst we're building roads and tunnels and train lines that have absolutely no business case.
That's his constituency, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, that's his constituency. So do you think there's a turn politically that he's actually starting to spend some of his political capital as a result of, like you say, slashing the public service and not funding community groups and mental health, et cetera?
I think in time, yes, and hopefully it is within this election cycle that becomes apparent. Certainly he's spending it, but is that coming to the fore, and are the constituents aware of it? Are they willing to look at it? That's another question that gets raised. But the other thing we've got to look at is what's the alternative? Because at the moment in Victoria, it really is a one-party system. We have an opposition that call themselves the Liberal Party, who after their recent performance in the last couple of years are anything but Liberal. They're not even a conservative party. They're trying to get votes from the left of politics because they've run out of votes on the right. So
how do they
whilst we've got this vacuum of an opposition, the government can do whatever it's like. Whilst we've had the worst government in this state's history during the pandemic years, the opposition, the official opposition, were not able to land a punch on this government. We should have had Victorians begging the opposition to take office, and yet they weren't. And
because for growth for us, right, I'll put this to you, Greg, we rely on immigration. So we rely on massive immigration from countries like China and like India have massive populations. That's how we manufacture. We don't actually manufacture anything anymore. So to keep employment up, particularly for a CFMEU male cohort in particular, building roads, building houses, building infrastructure, and we rely on that immigration. And the Liberals don't know how to manoeuvre themselves because the Labor Party has got that absolutely covered politically.
Well, yes. What they do, what the Labor Party do, they are very good at communicating with ethnic minorities or minority groups of all sorts and making all sorts of promises in the lead up to elections, whether they're honoured or not. That doesn't seem to matter to them. They will make a promise, they will get the vote, and that seems to be the end of the deal for them. And then with people, generally, they have a very short attention span and then we come around 4 years later, the same promises get made to the same people, the same result, they'll vote for that promise, it doesn't get acted on, and we move on. The other side don't make those promises because they think in acting ethically they will be more virtuous and they will be more deserving of the vote. So there's a lack of understanding as to what motivates people to vote. And we're left in the situation that we're in, where we have an uncompetitive opposition and a dominant incumbent.
But mass immigration is changing the nature of the country, isn't it? The demographic nature of the country is changing, and it's moving towards the east, not a Western, traditional Western understanding of itself that it had. And that's an existential problem, probably for both parties, but particularly an existential problem for the Liberal Party, with, you know, as the champions of smaller government, et cetera.
You're right. Immigration is an issue that needs to be addressed. And don't get me wrong, in the early days of Australia and Victoria, immigration served us very well. And we are the beneficiaries of a very diverse culture. you can go and have the benefits of multiple cultures that have come to this country, and we are all the better for it. What we now are forgetting or failing to recognize is that once you have an established society, unless you have a forward-thinking infrastructure program, the more people you bring in, the lower standard of living you create. In short, it's immigration works for nowadays the one person that's coming in right now, because it brings them typically from a lower standard of living to a higher standard of living that we have here. Once that person's here and settled, the next person that comes in after them actually makes that first person's life worse. And by that, I mean the next person that comes in is adding to traffic, so it's harder to get around. They are increasing demands on our schools, on our hospitals.
Housing stock.
Mm-hmm. Housing stock, law enforcement, the whole lot, mental health services, the list goes on and on and on. So whilst immigration has served us very well, it may actually be time to start thinking about, do we need such a high level of immigration? And let's not forget, we're talking about by 2030, Melbourne being a city of 9 million people.
Hmm.
That's a lot of people to bring in.
Yeah, Kevin Rudd talked about, and it's exponential growth too. It's extraordinary. It's almost, you would think, it sounds on the face of it just unsustainable.
Well, it
for
is.
Our cohesive culture.
Hmm. Yeah, it is. But it's actually a Ponzi scheme.
And do you know who it works really well for? Big government.
Correct.
Or these disparate communities. It works really well for big government.
Yeah. So for the people who are already here, it doesn't improve things for them. It'll make it harder to get around. It will make it more difficult to access services unless there's a change in the way that tax is collected. And then that's a whole
Pauline Hanson's called for zero population growth today. She's called for zero population growth. Australia is full as far as these things are hospitals concerned, demand on housing, jobs, et cetera.
Yeah, so zero population growth, it might be something worth looking at over the short term. Do we need a break? We had a break from immigration for 2 years, pretty much. Now, I don't know about you, but when we weren't in lockdown, those few weeks that we weren't, it felt like it was a little easier to get around. Since we've come out of lockdown and we've been out for quite some time now, it feels like each week it's getting harder and harder to move around on our roads. It's look, in the middle of the night, if you go from one portion of Melbourne, eastern suburbs, into inner suburbs of Melbourne, you can do that in about 25 to 30 minutes. Over morning time now in peak traffic, you're nearly an hour and a half. Now, that's very difficult to get around, particularly if you're going to and from areas that aren't well serviced by public transport.
Not if you're living in a 15-minute city. Correct.
Well, this is
we can't. My friend,
15-minute cities are a great idea if that's what you choose to do. It's when you're compelled, then I have a problem with it.
You can come back and we'll talk about it, Greg. Thanks for joining me on the Damien Richardson Show.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to TNT Radio.
It's back. A new UN climate report warns of doomsday unless we give the UN more power and go full Marxist. Oh no, haven't we heard this before?
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Fire, brimstone, ticking climate time bombs, once again! The new UN IPCC climate report is out, warning about a, quote, survival guide to humanity. Climatologists are weighing in. Dr. Judith Curry has called the report pure politics, weakly justified, politicized. MIT climate scientist Dr. Richard Lindzen says we should, quote, do nothing about global global warming, and instead says the United Nations is exploiting people's ignorance to promote fear. Well said. Remember, throughout human history, the ruling class has always tried to come up with reasons why the rest of us can't be free and why we should allow them to rule over us. Climate is their latest excuse. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Are you finding it harder to do the things you used to do, like vacuuming or getting to appointments? If you need a bit of support at home, the Australian Government's My Aged Care is your starting point to access services. You'll find all the information and advice you need in the one place. To find out about other services, eligibility and costs, call 1800 200 422 or go to myagedcare.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra, spoken by Heather Christie.
If you're talking about it,
we have seized enough fentanyl to kill every man, woman, and child in the entire United States of America.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
My final guest this hour is a return guest to the show. He also has his own show on TNT Radio, so I might get him to plug that too when he comes on. His name, of course, is David McBride. He's an Australian whistleblower. In 2011 and 13, he served in Afghanistan as a military lawyer to the Royal Australian Regiment and Australian Special Forces. David McBride made information on war crimes committed by Australian soldiers in Afghanistan available to the ABC. If convicted of the charges against him, David McBride faces many years in prison. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you. Now, there's things I want to talk to you about Afghanistan, but before I do that, I'm going to ask you about the Ukraine. Look, who's winning that? I keep hearing different reports from different people. Is there such a thing as someone being winning that war at this particular juncture? Or is that a silly question to ask in the first place?
No, it's not a silly question, but it is. Everything we read in the papers about Ukraine is what we call information operations. That is, it's false. It's a bit like advertising junk that you might see from someone who makes cars or washing machines. Or, like, I don't know how many times I've read that Putin is about to be toppled, or, you know, Ukrainians are making a huge breakthrough. Or if everything was true you read, the Ukrainians would be at Vladivostok by now. But it's so much of it. And one of the areas I used to work in the military is what information operations, psyops, and that is putting out false information. So you can recognize it when you see it. A legal officer has to sign off on it. And I get every day, I read in reputable papers too, you know, like the New York Times, especially, and the Washington Post, and The Economist even is one of the big offenders. They're just putting out false stuff about what's going on. The only way you'd actually see what was going on is to be there. In fact, ironically enough, what the West has come to, you're probably more likely to see the truth from the Russian reports than our own reports, because there is so much riding on it from the West's point of view. So they don't want to report what's actually going on. Everything they report is spin to make you support the American build-up there. And so they're not going to let the truth stand. It's a bit like COVID and the vaccines. You know, they're not going to let truth stand in the way of their preferred narrative.
Mm. So in your professional opinion then, David, what do you think the situation is on the ground in the Ukraine?
I haven't bothered to follow it too much. It would be a sort of a stalemate, I imagine. The Russians would certainly not be losing the sort of losses that they're meant to be, and they're a pretty professional force. They wouldn't be having all the desertions which we keep reporting, and I doubt that they're committing the war crimes which they keep getting reported for. I think a lot of the time it's false flag, because the Ukrainians have now got a free card. Get out of jail. I mean, they can make up anything. They can kill Russians and or kill anybody and say it was the Russians. It's a bit like, while for some viewers who are not familiar with this, we have precedent. It's a bit like Afghanistan in the 1980s when we had films like Rambo, whatever Rambo was, four, whatever he's in Afghanistan, and we painted the who's bringing down the evil Russians, you know, and we painted that every Russian was a sort of Bond villain, and everyone fighting them was these noble savages or whatever, and they ended up being the same people that joined the Taliban and fought us. But we were able to paint, and they committed a lot of atrocities, of course. But we painted them as lily white. We painted anybody that didn't support them as some sort of a communist. And you know, when I was in Afghanistan, I met plenty of people that actually wanted the Russians there because they thought they were updating the country and they were sick of living under tribal law and they wanted to live. They thought that the Russians would did a lot of good. Now, not everybody agreed with that, but the point I'm making is that everything we thought we knew about Afghanistan in the 80s was largely propaganda to make that war popular. And, of course, all that happened is eventually the Americans, once the Russians left, and if the Russians withdrew from Ukraine tomorrow, the Americans would leave as well, because it's just an excuse for them to kill Russians, and Ukraine would be a mess and suffer the same sort of state that Afghanistan did in the 90s, where it just became a vacuum and everyone was armed, all these pretty unpalatable groups who were just given weapons because they said, we're going to kill Russians for you, would start fighting each other. And the Ukrainian people would be in a very bad way. It's a very selfish policy of the Americans to try to bleed the Russians dry with this proxy war, in my opinion.
Yeah, so it's interesting, like, because throughout the Cold War, the Russians were the enemy, whether it was Rambo or another Sylvester Stallone franchise, Rocky, he fought. It was everywhere.
He fought a Russian there too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah. It was in all our media, right? So, and then it sort of died because the Cold War finished. The Soviet Union, the old Soviet Union collapsed around 1989 when the wall came down. I think it kept going till about 91, but ostensibly it was over. And then ISIS became the enemy for a while, especially after September 11. Well, let's not go into the details of that. But now the Russians have made a comeback as being enemy number one under Vladimir Putin in particular, haven't they?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I appeared on and George Galloway once, and some of my friends from the British Army were like, oh, you know, that's how dare you support Putin or whatever. It's kind of funny because they're not Soviets anymore. They're not communists. But some people, they just can't – you can't sort of shift it. The Russians – what the Russians could become, you know, democracy tomorrow and we'd still hate them, you know. We still have to kind of, and the cynic in me says the reason we have to hate the Russians and not the sort of Islamic extremists is because you can sell a lot more weapons fighting the Russians and the Chinese than you can fighting people without air force, and it seems like the information operations against Putin have been going for 20 years, and that's why the Americans do some things very well. I have to, from a professional point of view, they have been very good. Like, if I meet people who are quite rational people, it's the same as with the game with the vaccines, who absolutely believe Putin is Hitler, and if Americans dropped a bomb on Moscow, atomic bomb tomorrow, a lot of people would cheer. Now, that's the result of 20 years of propaganda messaging in those.
Well, it's even more than that, isn't it? Like you say, it goes back to the Cold War. There's people still hanging on to that. I know there's forts built around the Australian coastline in case of repelling Imperial Russians turning up in the 1880s.
Well, there's a great book called The Great Game and about Afghanistan in the sort of 1800s. And yeah, I read it and I actually got quite angry reading it because it was exactly the same. You had spooks, British spooks, going to Afghanistan and saying, oh, the Russians are going to go through Afghanistan and they're going to take over India. Now, that was never really a realistic chance. But that, as a result, they sent a British expeditionary force to Afghanistan, which got killed, basically, yes, slaughtered. But it was all pointless because the Russians were not coming. But the spooks either wanted to big time themselves, or for whatever reason, they talked up a threat that wasn't there. And I can see us repeating it. Like even in the Cold War, when the Soviets finally collapsed, and when Ronald Reagan was kind of patting himself on the back, it turned out that they weren't trying to overthrow the West. They were spending most of their time trying to perfect the tractor and trying to feed their own people, you know. But we were sort of like convinced, oh yeah, they're behind every corner and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to take over Australia, they're trying to, the domino effect in Vietnam. It turned out it was all spooks talking it all up, you know. They didn't have time, they didn't have the
money. Was the Cuban Missile Crisis though, that was very real, very hot, wasn't it? The Cuban Missile Crisis.
Well, the Cuban Missile Crisis, yes, but that's quite interesting because we're such hypocrites, because we were prepared to go to war, you know, because how dare the Russians put, you know, missiles within striking range of America? But the Americans are putting missiles within striking range of Moscow, and we consider that that's absolutely fine. And how dare Putin complain about it? So it's we're very hypocritical. And the same, you know, we have never explained why Putin's action in Ukraine is a terrible kind of war crime, but George W. Bush's invasion of Iraq was some sort of wonderful thing, and there doesn't seem to be that much of a difference. And but we there's no such thing as law anymore. We just use it to, you know, punish our target, our enemies. And the law, if the law means anything, it has to be applied consistently. And we can't say the invasion of Iraq was okay, whatever our justification was, but then say Putin's a war criminal for what he's doing in Ukraine without explaining the difference.
Well, there's a Ukrainian defense spokesman is in Australia at the moment asking for us to give more military hardware to the campaign, saying it's a fight for freedom, the usual stuff for our children. And they want us to send 14 of our 59 Abrams tanks that we've purchased from the US. What's the likelihood of that?
Oh, I think that's probably quite a big likelihood, which is a shame. I mean, it's very difficult to fly tanks. You have to take them by ship. By the time they get there, you know, I guess maybe there might be years. The Americans can supply tanks a lot quicker. But I think the second point he makes is to say, oh, it's very good for the public relations. I think it's more, and Australia's military contribution, whether it's in Iraq or whether it's in Afghanistan, is relatively tiny. But the Ukrainians and the Americans love it because it makes it look, it brings other people in, because we have a reputation for being a sort of a rational Western nation. And if people see the Australians contributing, it's more for psychological effect as anything else. And of course, once we contribute something, we've got skin in the game. And so if anything happens, we'll only commit more. It was like we first sent training teams to Vietnam in the 60s, and before we knew it, we were sending the whole army, because once you start taking casualties, or once you just get more and more committed. And the Ukrainians are clever. They're like the Afghans in the 80s. This guy's a very clever salesman coming out here and saying it's all about freedom and truth. And actually it's the opposite. And
they just want hardware at the moment though, don't they? They want hardware. They don't want bodies on the ground from Australia.
Oh, I think there probably already are bodies on the ground, as we discussed. The special forces had already been there. But they're saying they just want hardware, but they want... If we give them hardware, that means that we are totally committed to their to their cause. It's a bit like when you're trying to having an argument with your friends and you're trying to get as many people as you can on side. You know that once somebody has lent you some money or somebody's sort of got skin in your game, they're going to stay on your side. And it's a bit of a salesman's trick, this. It's a bit like AUKUS or whatever. They know that they can bring you in. It's a bit like the submarines. Oh, you want a submarine? We'll give you submarines as long as you do this for us, and then we'll all be friends, sort of thing.
David, I've got a difficult question I want to ask you, and I haven't got much time left, yeah. So I just want to ask you this. I've got a friend who's a corporal in the Australian Army, and he's got a friend who's facing court-martial now over the expose on Four Corners program, and he thinks he's may be put away for life, and he thinks unfairly because he thinks he retaliated against a man who was unarmed, but what had happened previously, that man's family and him had been responsible for the death of some of his comrades?
Yeah, look, I'm good on him, and that's I'd be happy to run his defence myself. If that's the case, he'll have a chance to put that in court, and I think that there are all sorts of things that soldier could put. It gives me no pleasure to see him in court. I'm not a whistleblower against him. I'm a whistleblower against the leadership, against the generals. I think he's got a number of different defences. He could say, you know, I was given the orders. All sorts of things like that. This is
the brass will try and throw him under the bus, won't they?
The brass are typically making an example of him. I reckon that they are the ones that really. I would rather see one general on charge than 50 corporals. I've got no axe to grind against that soldier at all. And good luck to him. Argue that defence. I'd run it for him if he wanted me to.
David McBride, thanks for joining me on the Damien Richardson Show.